The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
I want to introduce a really good friend of mine, one of the top portfolio managers in the country, as I gave the lead in. One of the truly, I mean, a guy who could actually pick a stock in January and have it perform so well he can win a contest in December 31st. Pretty amazing. And Charles has done that clearly in 1 year, and then he kind of got beat out in the last 30 minutes or so of last year. In fact, we'll ask him about what he's got set up for this year. But he's one of the top portfolio managers from Dallas, Texas, head of Sourcemore Capital, and also has a newsletter. And we'll talk a little bit more about that and give you an opportunity to go online and take a look at that today. So anyway, welcome to the show, Charles Sizemore. Charles, good morning.
Good morning.
By the way, Charles, what is your stock for 2013? I assume you've entered the contest again, correct?
I have, and drum roll, I'm actually in first place at the moment. I have a comfortable 6-point lead on number two. I chose Daimler this year, the maker of the Mercedes-Benz.
Wow. So now what was your pick in 2011?
Visa.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you did well on Visa. Yeah, big time. And then 2012, you picked what?
I picked Turkcell.
Turkcell, and you were ahead until what, the last 30 minutes, hour? What? I thought it was 30 minutes. Am I right on that or not?
It was the last 30 minutes of the trading day. And what was funny is the guy who won had actually called me to congratulate me on winning because he had assumed the trading day was winding down and that it was already a done deal. And then in the last 15 minutes of the trading day, his stock popped up. So when he called to offer his congratulations, I said, no, actually, buddy, I'm here to offer congratulations to you.
Well, isn't that something? All right, so Mercedes-Benz, and you're comfortable in the lead again. That's pretty impressive, Charles. It really is. So what do you think of the markets now? I mean, we're down about 5%. You know, they're really frenetic. People are getting kind of worn out because we came down about, 3.3 to 4, something like that. Then started to improve, and then Syria happened. And now we're down 5. Markets are not really getting clobbered, I would say. I mean, you know, we have a bad day here and there. A couple weeks ago, we're down 200 points. But the markets lately seem to be, they're opening up fairly flat. But then they may end up, you know, down 170, I guess, was yesterday's. And so, you know, they're beginning to lose some ground here. What are your thoughts? What do you think of the market as a whole right now?
Sure. Well, there's a couple moving parts. You know, to start, the biggest issue, even been in Syria. Now, Syria is what's on everybody's mind today. But the bigger issue that's been driving all this over the summer has been fears of the Fed taper. And because the Fed has been somewhat vague on what its plans are, you know, that they haven't given specific dates or, you know, they haven't given a lot of specifics. People are just assuming the worst, and they're selling off stocks in general, and in particular. Dividend-paying stocks and some of the more conservative, higher-quality issues, they're actually getting, ironically, they're getting hit harder than some of the lower-quality issues. Exception being emerging markets. Right now, with the fear that, you know, the Fed's going to pull back all this liquidity, portfolio managers are sort of jumping the gun here, and they're pulling in a lot of the more speculative trades overseas. So what you've had is emerging markets have gotten clobbered this year. I think that that selling looks to be sort of tapering off here. I use the word taper. That's a very overused word these days.
But, yes, it is.
I do think the selling is tapering off there. So I would expect we'll probably have a couple more weeks here of choppiness before we have a nice finish to the year.
So you're looking for a nice finish this year, huh?
I am. Now, to be fair, I do think there could be a little more choppiness until it's more obvious what the Fed's going to do. And I have my own opinions on what the Fed's going to do, but because there's so much uncertainty there, I don't think the market's really going to find good footing until there's some clarity. And I think there will be within the next month.
And Charles, that's the headline on Market Watch right on the front is that this whole Syria crisis will have the Fed putting a halt to the taper.
Well, I think it'll at least slow it down. You know, if you're running the Fed and you're weighing all the options here and you're a little bit non-committal, you're not exactly sure if this is the time to start scaling back. And from all of the Fed announcements up until now, you can see there is a good amount of doubt. The Fed is being very candid, much more so than Alan Greenspan ever would have been. The Bernanke Fed is, you know, Alan Greenspan was a god who could do no wrong. He knew everything. But Bernanke, he's more modest. I mean, he'll tell you that he's having second thoughts on this or that. And all the announcements that have come out, Bernanke has said, well, yeah, I do see some improvement in the employment picture, but I also see a lot of underemployment. Now, I should comment on that. For the last years, whenever any politician or political figure, anybody, mentioned that unemployment was falling, the first caveat to that from anybody wanting to play the other side was, well, what about underemployment? What about U6? What about people that are in part-time work or people that are working fewer hours than they want? Well, the Fed's addressing that. They're saying underemployment is still high and the labor participation rate is lower than it should be due to discouraged workers. So when I look at, you know, the Fed, I see a Fed that is not sure what it wants to do with tapering, and if anything, they're going to err on the side of caution. Now, you throw Syria into the mix, you throw in this new unknown, and I think the likelihood that they taper in a hurry goes down, and yes, I think this does. If they were planning on easing into tapering this month, they'll put it off for at least another month or two.
No, that's probably good news in spite of all that's going on. By the way, folks, just want to remind you, if you'd like to talk to Charles, Charles is really truly one of the brightest guys in the room. I mean, he gets embarrassed when I say this, but you know, if any of you have seen the Big Bang Theory, all right, now, if we had a financial Big Bang Theory, Charles would be one of those guys. I mean, he is just really one of the truly the brightest people I have ever met on Wall Street. If you'd like to ask him a question today, 877-711-5611 is the number. Give us a call, 877-711-5611. Charles and I would be happy to take your call. Okay, Charles. All right. So you seem to be somewhat optimistic about the overall result of this. It seems to me like the positive out of all this serious situation will be either a slowing down or maybe a delay in the tapering. When the tapering does come, let's just kind of move forward, get past all this serious stuff. We'll come back to it later when we talk about emerging markets. But when the tapering finally does come, what impact do you see? Do you think it will have, realistically, QEs have not done anything really to help the economy as of late. But it's a psychological thing. When this finally comes, will that psychological impact be enough to finally get the sell-offs that so many people have been looking for? You and I both share a very good friend in Harry Dent. Now, and Harry's had to admit that, you know, that his prognostications of the market demise have not taken place, but largely because of the Fed intervention. Do you think that that once this this intervention by the Fed recedes, that we might, in fact, get back to a market driven more by demographics, driven more by corporate earnings, and that we'll see a pullback? And we've got less than a minute to go. So I tell you what, I was kind of carried into that, and you can think about it on the other side of the break. The other thing that I want to talk about when we get on the side of the break, Charles, is really the emerging market. There's a lot of conversation now. There was a question yesterday, a headline that I saw, have emerging markets gotten oversold? That came from Mark Mobius at Templeton, and they're starting to kind of snoop around on that. So a lot of folks out there who are looking at the emerging markets, a lot of them are blaming the United States for the malaise they're going through. I'd like to talk about it on the side of the break. Folks, we've got a lot to talk about with Charles Sizemore. Stay tuned.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
All right. As I said, we have got one of the smartest guys in the room today, one of our favorite guests. Our good friend Charles Sizemore is on with us today of Sizemore Capital. By the way, Charles, how do they tune into your newsletter and get in touch with you? How would you prefer that happen?
Sure. They can go to sizemoreletter.com, And if they're interested in subscribing, shoot me an email at subscriptions@sizemoreletter.com, and I'll make sure they get the Mike Robertson discount.
Yep, and folks, you really got to try this out, because you're talking to a guy who literally for the last 3 years has been one of the top, if not the top, the top stop picker in the country. So, I mean, all you folks out there, particularly those of you that manage your own money, you run around all the time looking for newsletters, you look for people to listen to, all right? And you get a lot of guys that tell you how wonderful they are and all their prognostications, but Charles actually does it. I mean, he actually picks stocks. He was number one in this contest in 2011, number two last year, number one until the last 30 minutes, and he's ahead by 6 points this year. You couldn't ask for better performance. So go to Charles's site. We're going to give it to you again later on in the show, and take a look at his newsletter. I get it. I encourage you to do the same. In fact, Charles manages some money for me, and you can talk to him about that too. He does a great, great job. I've got part of my personal assets with him. He's excellent. Anyway, we had a listener. Take it
away,
Peggy.
Yes, we actually do. We have a listener that called in, Joe from Houston, and he wants to know, where do you see the volatility index going for the rest of the year?
Sure. I would expect it to be a little bit higher than usual for the next couple weeks, maybe the rest of this quarter. I would expect that to taper. Here I am using the word taper again. I would expect that to fall off in the fourth quarter. I don't expect to see a huge spike in volatility. I, very importantly, I do not see anything like a 2008-2009 scenario. I see maybe on the higher side of normal for the next few weeks, and then just dipping down into a normal range for the rest of the year.
Okay. Thank you, Joe, for that question. And, folks, you can either go to straighttalkmoney.com and send a question or call us at 877-711-5611.
And then there was an email from Gabrielle.
Yes, Gabrielle, one of our listeners, Charles. And she, ironically, she sent me this email yesterday saying she had a question for you. And I said, well, hey, you are in luck, because he just happens to be on. She wanted to know, you had mentioned one time about an unconventional toilet.
Yeah, I did. I know this is kind of gross, and we don't like to think about this sort of thing, but sanitation is a major problem for about half the world's population. About 40 to 45% of the world's population does not have a sanitary toilet to use, and there's all sorts of problems that stem from that contaminates drinking water. It makes little children sick. It causes infant mortality rates. I mean, it really is a big problem. In steps in Bill Gates. Now, usually when billionaires have charitable initiatives, it's something that's real glitzy and glamorous and white tablecloths and tuxedos and that sort of thing. Bill Gates isn't like that. He says, I want to solve the sanitation problem. So he hosted a contest. His foundation hosted a contest to make a functioning toilet that does not require a sewage system. Now, the most expensive part of modern plumbing is building all of the sewage system that goes under the city. You know, that's a massive municipal undertaking that costs a lot of money. Well, a village in Africa, a village in India, they don't have those funds at their disposal. It's just not an option for them. But if you have a couple of these standalone toilets that reduces human waste to usable non-toxic fertilizer. Sometimes they're solar powered. You know, sometimes they. You know, the idea is they use very little electricity, if any at all, and they use no external plumbing. You know, that they're standalone deals that are more functional and less disgusting than an average porta potty, and don't require constant maintenance. So that really is a major step forward, and this is really part of a bigger theme here, and that is just the rising of this new emerging market middle class, who's, you know, slowly but surely getting into, you know, not quite Western living standards, but definitely middle class global living standards.
Well, you mentioned Africa, and they really have an increasing consumer base there that's having an effect on, say, equities here like P&G and things of that nature.
Absolutely, and a company I've mentioned multiple times because I love the macro story here is Heineken. Heineken is the Dutch beer brewery. They're big. They're all over the world. Well, they've been very active building out their network in Africa over the last couple decades. And they have about a 20 to 25% of their profits from Africa already. Now, where that gets interesting is here. Most sub-Saharan alcohol consumed in Africa is moonshine. It's actually homemade alcohol, or, you know, calling it a microbrew would be generous. It's something that, you know, somebody made in their backyard or or their bathtub. As living standards rise, middle class Africans trade up to bottled beer and branded, you know, brands that you and I would have heard of. That is a major long-term trend that has decades to run. So that, you're absolutely right about Western companies getting involved there. And that to me, is the way, as an investor, that's the direction you want to look. You could go buy African stocks. You could. That's going to be risky and volatile. You're going to have better, the overall risk-return trade-off is going to be a lot better in targeting Western companies with good access there.
Yeah, now when you're saying African stocks, you mean companies that are headquartered in Africa. Of course, you probably exclude from that a lot of the South African stocks, because that's a very stable environment there. We're actually buying, in the portfolio that we manage here, we're actually buying an African consumer, well, a consumer stock that's not African, like you. It comes out of Europe. And so you're right. I think that probably European or American-based companies that are selling into Africa are those from South Africa, of the nation of South Africa, are probably the places to go. It's kind of hard to find a lot of African stocks anyway, isn't it, Charles?
Well, you'd have to have a specialty broker, or you'd have to invest in thinly traded ADRs here.
Right.
It's tricky, and it's something that the average investor is not appropriate for the average investor, and it's not something that they would want to get their hands in anyway. It's going to be more trouble than it's worth.
Let's move from Africa. In fact, let's kind of maybe shift over to South America, because Brazil's been making a lot of noise lately, pointing fingers at the United States and at the Fed, basically saying that the Fed policies and the threat of tapering is part of the difficulty, to say the least, that emerging markets have gone through as of late. Emerging markets have really gotten hit pretty hard now for quite some time. What are your thoughts on emerging markets, is there a complete legitimate?
Well, the moral from this story is be careful what you wish for. If you recall, a couple years ago, Brazil's finance minister said there is an international currency war going on right now, and we will not lose. Now, what did he mean by that? He said that the U.S., Europe, and Japan were keeping their currencies artificially low. Now, this is the developed world keeping their currencies artificially low, which was making some emerging markets non-competitive. So he was saying, look, I'm tired of the Brazilian real here continuing to climb in value. It's killing our exports. It's hollowing out our industrial base. We're going to lower the value of this currency. Well, be careful what you wish for, because with all of the Fed tapering talk going on, investors have pulled money out of Brazil and other emerging markets, and it's caused the currency to collapse. So there certainly is some truth there. Western capital inflows during the easy money period pushed up the value, and now as they're pulling the money out, it's pushing down the value.
Wow. Well, you're right. Be careful what you wish for. Hey, Charles, if you'll stay with us for a little bit, we'd like to get on the other side of the break. I'd like to talk to you about what are your thoughts on gold, any other thoughts you might have on where the investor should be going right now, because it is a tumultuous time. Want to mention again, folks, that we've got the luncheon, the dinner coming up on September 5th,
mm-hmm.
Talking about investment real estate in New York. So give Peggy a call or go to straighttalkmoney.com. Back to you in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Charles Sizemore has been our guest today, and go to the sizemoreletter.com. I cannot recommend this more highly. Those of you that manage money, if you want to manage your own, do it. For those advisors that are listening, I was notified the other day, we get advisors that are listening.
Yes.
In Austin and Houston. Things. For those advisors that are listening out there, get Charles's letter. It'll help you out. He lays out exactly stocks that he likes and why he likes them, when he buys them, when he sells them. It'll help you manage your portfolio. I'm serious. Get Charles's letter. Go to sizemoreletter.com. And for those of you that just want good information and just want a good newsletter written by a really bright person, the sizemoreletter.com. Peggy and Charles were having this great conversation during the break, and I stopped them because it was so good. I said, wait a minute, save it for the air. So why don't you guys start try to recreate this as best you can?
Well, Charles, basically what I was asking Charles, I wanted to get his insight. Yes, there is so much talk about Syria. Okay, as an investor, then is there a way for me to make a play on this if we get involved with Syria? And actually, it stems from an article I saw on MarketWatch this morning, and it was saying, you know, basically get ahead of the trade. So how would you play it, Charles?
Well, the first thing I would keep in mind is that the last two Middle Eastern wars we had were the Iraq War and then, of course, Operation Desert Storm, you know, back in 1990. In both cases, by the time the boots actually hit the ground, the market had started rallying from its lows. Now, if you think back to 2003, when the Iraq War was, we had just come out of one of the worst bear markets in history, starting in 2000. Well, the month that the Iraq War started happened to coincide with one of the best bull markets of our lifetime, the 2003-2007 bull market. Back in 1990, that was also a tough time in the stock market. Between the time when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait and the American and allied forces started fighting back, the market had long since bottomed out and started rallying. So I would say, you know, the first thing to do is don't panic and just sell all your stocks. I mean, if you're thinking about selling stocks anyway, by all means, rebalance your portfolio or do whatever you need to do, but don't go sell your stocks because of this.
Now, what effect do you think it might have on, say, gold and oil as an investment?
Sure. Now, with oil, there's always that risk of Middle Eastern that it drags in the oil producers like Iran and what have you. Mm-hmm. So there's always – oil could have a spike. I'd be reluctant to try to trade that because I expect it to be volatile. But gold, what about gold? Well, people have this idea that gold is a safe haven, and that's fine. There's some historical basis for that. However, the biggest factor driving gold's massive bull market of the last decade was central bank fears, you know, fears that the central banks were just going to print money and you know, all of that, just loose money. Well, now that we have the infamous tapering, the most overused word in finance right now, now that we have, the Fed has reached the end of its ultra loose policies, and there's nowhere to go now but to come back from it. There's just that big macro impetus for gold just isn't there. So, could there be some tiny little short term blip due to a Syria war? Well, yeah, there could. But you're fighting a pretty big, massive trend here that suggests that the wave for gold is down. So I wouldn't touch gold right now.
Of course, my big concern is not so much of what's going on in Syria, because we know they're not an oil producer or anything, but the allies, like we said, you know, if you're going to drag Iran into it. And China gets so much of their oil from Iran, what effect that would have on the Chinese economy. And we know there does seem to be a correlation between what goes on in the Chinese economy that eventually affects us.
Well, there's a couple parts there that they're moving. Another big oil producer is Russia, who is a very strong ally of Syria because they have a large military base there. So that there could be that could go up. Who knows what could happen there. With China, a risk to them would be if Iran gets dragged into this, and in the events that follow, the Straits of Hormuz get closed, and you know, oil does not flow through there, that could definitely cause some short term supply issues for China. It definitely could. I would not see long term lasting damage, but it could definitely cause some short term volatility.
Well, and of course, yesterday, I think it was yesterday that we did mention about Russia, and the Saudis apparently are trying to make a secret deal with them if they'll just back away from their support of Assad.
But basically, isn't this just going to, I think, and you started out this way, Charles, isn't this just going to create a buying opportunity? I mean, very rarely do wars really impact us in a negative way, or even little skirmishes or even what they have in mind this time. Usually the markets sell off in anticipation of, and then rally when we start
when the boots hit the ground. Yeah.
And so it looks to me like this is just going to create a buying opportunity. Speaking of buying opportunities, what areas do you like? I'm not asking you for individual stocks. I know that's part of your portfolio. That's kind of a proprietary situation. But what areas are you looking at that you like in the market?
Sure, sure. I consider the U.S. market attractive, but not nearly as attractive as it was, you know, a year or two ago. I like to overweight Europe right now, and I'm looking to overweight emerging markets. Now, I haven't quite pulled the trigger on emerging markets because there's been so much volatility there. I am waiting for it to sort of play itself out. As they say, you don't want to try to catch that proverbial falling knife.
Right.
But I am overweight Europe right now, and I am looking to get overweight in emerging markets.
Okay. All right. So that's where you are in the market, and then you're not so much in gold. In fact, I noticed gold is actually down today for the first time. Kind of interesting. The Dow's up 26, S&P's up 2.5, but gold's actually down a couple of bucks. So you don't like gold. You're being selective on where you're going on equities. And then what is your thought on bonds? Are you a person leaving bonds now? There are people that feel like maybe this is an opportunity to trade bonds. There's some more opportunity there, but most of the street is saying, hey, get out of bonds because the risk is very high. What is your thought on bonds?
Well, bonds have sold off massively since May, so a decent bit of the risk has already been taken out simply because, you know, when the price falls, well, by definition, you're at less risk of, you know, you've already experienced the fall, so it could go lower, of course, but it's less risky at that point. My view on bonds hasn't changed. I think they're terrible as an investment for most people. However, sometimes you need them. Sometimes you need, you can't be all in equities. You can't be all in something that is volatile. You need something that is stable. And if you buy and hold individual bonds to maturity, they are stable and they do pay interest. And you know, you're probably going to lose in inflation adjusted terms. But at least it is a consistent cash flow. So my basic view on bonds is if you need consistent cash flow and you can't stomach volatility, then they're fine. Now, I would recommend going with dividend-paying stocks if you're a little bit more open to accepting some stock market volatility.
Yeah, but, we like REITs too. So,
absolutely.
I would agree with you. I'd agree with you. Probably stay out of bonds. Listen, Charles, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate
you
it.
You bet.
The SizemoreLetter.com, folks. Get a hold of Charles. SizemoreLetter.com.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.